Mini episode 1911 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1911. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Steve Callis. And up until, had we been able to do a preseason MLB preview last year, which, by the way, that's what this is, that's our 2026 MLB preview. Ever since 2018, we've done this on the show with Steve Callis, myself, and Ken Detweiler, and doing it as a tribute to Don Koster. Just to backtrack a bit here, I started off doing baseball broadcasting back at the old Sports Talk Network in the mid-2000s here as a sidekick on Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler, with Ken and with Don Koster, his brother-in-law. And Don was somebody who, unfortunately, even at that time, was a lot of times in ill health. So Ken kind of needed somebody else to be in there. Sometimes it'd be the two of us. Sometimes it'd be the three of us. Don eventually succumbed to his physical ailments in late 2017. We've done it as the Don Koster tribute, the first segment of the season, ever since then. Last year, we get into March, and I was looking at scheduling snafu here because both Ken and Steve were going to be traveling during the month at different times. So I was like, okay, well, we'll do the first segment as an early MLB analysis. We've done that sometimes if the schedule didn't allow us to get one in before the season. And unfortunately, by the time we did it, it was just me and Steve because Ken, unfortunately, suddenly passed away, much in similar fashion to his wife 9 months earlier. It's really kind of eerie how that happened. And Ken was a guy where, again, he was just kind of like soldiering on bravely through those 9 months. But I don't think we did any segments with him past the time of that happening because he was still just kind of, you know, just sort of rebuilding what it was going to take to kind of get through things. And he had some thoughts and he had some plans for the future. He was starting to get his arms around some things, but then that would turn out not to be the case. So by the time we were recording this last year, Steve and I think in May, it was the Detweiler Koster tribute, as it will be from now on. And it's hard to say just even talking about that is the case. And we always said this, that Steve was not a guy that knew us back in the day with that show. Subsequently, I mean, Steve got to know me in the very early days of the FDH Lounge, still at the Sports Talk Network, but after we were done with Life's a Pitch. And Ken and I wanted to do the show with Steve. We'd recorded shows with him previously, baseball segments, but it always meant a lot to us to have him sit in because Life's a Pitch, when it was at its best, was a three-man booth. And who better to do it than Steve? If we couldn't have Don Koster in with us, who better than Steve to be a part of that? And so last year it became a part of spending the beginning part of the show in terms of this being a memorial segment for them, talking about both Ken and Don. And I'm prepared to do that in a second or so here, but just want to tag in Steve here at the outset and just get your sort of opening thoughts on this. Last year it was kind of thrust upon us kind of suddenly that this was going to be the case. I think there was still some shock at the time when we had recorded this. It's been almost a year now for it to kind of set in, and it was extra sad because another one of the FDH Lounge dignitaries, another one of the guys from the old Sports Talk Network days, Anthony Patrone, he unfortunately, right about the time of Ken's wife passing away, contracted stage 4 colon cancer. So Anthony's thing was not sudden in the way that Ken's was, but still shocking. He was only 45 and he passed away 18 days after Ken did. And I remember, and Anthony was in the hospital the last month of his life. And I remember actually trying to like shield him from the news initially, because in this day and age, it's going to hit Facebook at some point, right? So I was talking to his brother, Matt. I'm like, you got to keep Anthony off of Facebook until we tell him about Ken. So it was just, it was a really, really rough period of time with both of those guys. And again, we're here in the next spring and it still hurts. It still stings, but it's not as fresh anymore. And maybe a little bit more of a vantage point to be able to speak fondly about them without having our thoughts jumbled by the immediate grief of it. So like I said, I just want to turn it over to you here for a second, Steve, and get your initial thoughts on this.
Well, I still think it's a little sad, but I will say this. I think it's fantastic that you, Rick Morris, have kept alive Don Koster's name. And, of course, now we'll keep alive Ken Detweiler's name for as long as we can do it. I never met Don, but you guys told me all about him. And so I'm honored to always substitute for him, if those are the right words. But Ken Detweiler, I was fortunate. My son went to Oberlin out there at Cleveland, and I got to meet Ken a couple of times and spend some time with him. And, you know, talk about a baseball guy, talk about a baseball lifer. For sure, that was Ken Detweiler, who also knew his stuff, who also was an excellent coach, who also enjoyed doing this with the two of us every year as much as we did, I think, Rick. And so on the one hand, it's sad, but on the other hand, it's great. It's great that we do this every year. And again, certainly I want to do it as long as I can do it. But it really is all about baseball. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're all baseball guys.
Yeah, and that's what brought us together in the first place. And I actually came across something this morning, and I don't remember the name of this actress offhand, but kind of coincidental that she was speaking of somebody that was another FDH Lounge guest that we had had on back in the day, Peter Scolari. This was the woman that was working opposite him on Newhart's sitcom back in the 80s. Bespeckled blonde lady. I don't remember her name. Julia something, I think. Very unprofessional of me not to have come in here with that particular information. But she was saying about him, you know, because she was getting a compliment from the interviewer on their chemistry. And she said, well, it was really all him, because Peter formed chemistry just so effortlessly with people. And that was always the defining thing in a broadcast sense about Ken. And whenever somebody would be coming in for the first time, I would tell them that. I would always say, hey, you're not going to believe this. But I go back to like in 2004, it was what came to be known as Puck and a Pitch Saturdays at the Sports Talk Network, or Pitch and a Puck. I was doing a hockey show that was on before that. Ken comes in for the first time. I meet him off air, my co-host Joe Lindway and I. We meet him. We're talking to him. And Ken just kind of like, hey, you know, my brother-in-law is going to be my sidekick on this, Don Koster, but he's in ill health today, couldn't make it. Anyway, either one of you two guys could stick around. I don't have anything going on. So, yeah, what the hell, I'll do it. It was a winter Saturday on the North Coast. What am I going to go do? So I hang out with him and just like talk to him a little bit in the break before we started, and talked a little bit during the commercial breaks. But at the end of the 2 hours, I felt like I'd known him my whole life. And that's an experience that people had time and time and time again with him. I'm sure that's one of the things I told you ahead of time, is you're not going to believe this about this guy. But it would always be the case. He'd get on there, and just his warm and unassuming way and the humility that he had. He was always such a sponge for what other people were saying. And he could always make you feel like the smartest person in the world by the way that he was reacting to a point that you had made or something like that. And that was one, not all, but that was one of the great gifts that he had, Steve.
I agree.
He was very, very, very good at that. And Don, and we talked about it before, just the trademark, funny, gruff kind of a guy that, you know, he would just comport himself in a very like gruff kind of a way, making his points, but very funny and just a real, real, real classic. And so I try to come up with something thematic at the top of the show here to talk about them in terms of baseball and serve as a transitional point into our baseball preview for the year, which we're going to be doing. And that would be, as I look at what has been, I think, you know, ratings and interest-wise thus far, the success of the World Baseball Classic. And looking at it, that the last two World Series have had really big numbers relative to what they had been. I mean, not relative to when we grew up or anything like that, when it was monstrous, but relative to where it's been. And you look at what has been apparently the success of the pitch clock as far as the interest kind of coming up here, and the elimination of at least the extreme manifestations of the shift, and trying to get baseball away from the three true outcomes that it had morphed into for a long period of time here for about a decade or so, because of the effect of analytics and the way that analytics was being applied. and just talking to friends of mine that were more casual baseball fans or not even really baseball fans who would complain to me that the game was like really unwatchable at that point. And I was like, I'm a big fan, but I can't really disagree with you. Like I find it to be bogged down at this point and whatever. So I talked about this with you off air just to kind of prepare you for where I was going with this, Steve, but I think it's the duality, and Ken and Don would be feeling the duality even more so than me because they were both older than me and thus had been immersed in baseball longer than me. The duality of if you grew up when baseball was huge, you wanted to try to get back to that point. But if you're a purist, it's probably not going to happen in the ways that you would want it to be. It's going to be something that is going to more so realistically appeal to today's attention span, the Zoomers, the millennials, the people with the short attention spans. And this, I had been predicting, I think, even before I became aware of that MLB show, was a Quick Pitch or whatever it is in the morning, like from 8 to 9, a lot of times that they have. I had been predicting that there would be some version of that to come along, but I thought maybe it might be at night, that like maybe like at 9:30, like once the game's done, you'd watch that instead of watching the game. That would be something that would appeal to millennials and stuff. That's sort of an extreme version of it, as if it's extremely dehydrated and nothing but the action. But it just, the baseball is just, again, the things that it's doing to get itself more towards the mainstream. And by the way, it's really going to be in the mainstream if there's a lockout, because that's going to be big news, but that's another story. But the things that it's doing are not the things that necessarily the purists would appreciate. And if Ken and Don were here right now, I know that they would be, they'd be expressing that duality. I'm glad to see more people getting into baseball, but I wish it was the brand of baseball that I came up on. I know for a fact that's what they'd be saying.
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, I kind of figured you would, because you're at least a similar point. Like Ken and Don, well, Don I think a little bit younger than you, or it's hard to tell. But Ken was older than you, but you guys, I could kind of say with your mentalities and everything like that. Like I said, I'm not so far removed in the thought process from where you guys are, but just I'm a little more, you know, to where I can live with this. I was going to say pragmatic, but that makes it sound like a judgment thing on my part. I can live with the trade-offs a little bit more, I guess is what I would say. I don't want to make it a judgment call like I'm right and you're wrong or vice versa. But yeah, it's just, it's how we all look at it, the trade-offs that baseball is making and what they're doing at this point. And while we're mentioning this here, and we'll get to more of a preview of the different leagues later on, but in terms of, I've made this note recently here that with the mini episode numbers now getting into the 1900s, seeing if I can find a way to tie it to what we have going on with what we're talking about. Like when we did the Olympic hockey recap, myself and Russ Cohen, it was 1908. So I said, can we say that Werenski to Hughes at the end was the Tinkers to Evers the Chance of Olympic hockey? So thank you. Thank you. So here's what I got for this one. 1911. We were a couple of years away from the world changing in a very precipitous form. And will we look back, if there's a lockout, will we look back on the Kyle Tucker signing by the Dodgers as the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand? Will we?
You know, it's funny you just said that, because just as you're talking about it, I'm thinking, so what's my view of all of this? And I can tell you, and I'm old enough, I was a little kid, but I'm old enough to remember when Koufax and Drysdale held out for $100,000 each. Mm-hmm. And it was like the most incredible thing in the history of the world. But when we were young, and this came from my father also, though, when we were young, you rooted for the guys to get more money, more money, more money, because you knew about the 1919 Black Sox. Mm-hmm. You knew what these guys were getting paid. You knew, and I don't know if it would be 1911 or 1908 or 1901, but I think you would have entire teams whose entire payments for the whole team for the whole season would add up collectively to $10,000. So yep. That was lunacy when we were growing up. But then what happened? I'm certainly wasn't never knocking free agency at the beginning. But at some point, and I think it became when I had kids and took a family of four to a baseball game, Rick. And when you saw how much it cost you to take a family of four to a baseball game, when I was a kid, my father and I went to 40 games in Yankee Stadium in the bleachers, $1 to get in. 40 games. Yeah. He worked at the post office. Now, what can you do today? I took my kid. Johnny Callis was a big fan of Allen Houston. We got these tickets during Christmas vacation when he was little to go see the Knicks. And before the game, I think it was like 400 for three tickets or something, and good seats. And right before the game started, they said Allen Houston will not be playing tonight. He's got a stomach ache.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, are you kidding me, man?
Yeah.
So the problem now today is, do I think there should be a salary cap in baseball? I'm starting to think at some point, because I was going to bring up who you already brought up. If you're paying Kyle Tucker, a very good baseball player, don't get me wrong, if you're paying him $60 million a year, there's something wrong with that. Mm-hmm. And so I think the problem for me now is the pendulum has totally swung. It used to be way back here, and I'm talking 120 years ago. Yeah. But now through the times, and it was terrible in the 30s, 40s, 50s, legendary Branch Rickey, when he became the GM of the Pirates after the Dodgers, and Ralph kind of led the league in home runs every year, and he walked in, and I said, I want a raise, and Branch Rickey said to him, the legendary Branch Rickey said, hey, we came in last with you, we can come in last without you.
Yeah, no.
That's how bad the Pirates were back then. So my point is, those guys all should have got raises. They tried to cut Mickey Mantle the year after he won the Triple Crown because he didn't win the Triple Crown.
Yeah.
And so, again, these are way back things now. But what's happened has gotten totally out of control. And I think the thing that bothers me the most is that the normal person – I wrote an article about bowling 20 years ago, Rick, and poor people bowl anymore because the money was going so much up just to bowl. Yeah. And the answer was no. Now it's horrific. You know, you're a bowler. If you go in and you're not in the league, you're paying $7 a game or whatever that. You still pay $6 for the shoes they squirt the stuff in. So yeah. I don't really go all crazy like that. But the problem in all the sports, but especially in baseball, is because of these salaries, the money is stupid money to go to a ball game.
It is. A lot to unpack there. First of all, quickly, I'll mention on the subject of bowling. Since you mentioned it, shout out and congratulations. You knew this was coming to a fellow North Coast native, an old bowling teammate of mine, Patrick Dombrowski, who is now your United States champion.
He won. Yeah.
He won.
Good for you.
Fun fact, he bowled his first 300 at age 16. A week before I got my only one. So that was, we got to congratulate each other that year as it happened.
That's fantastic. It's funny you say that. Johnny Callis called me up and he said, Daddy, you know Dombrowski, he won the U.S. Open. You know where he's from? He's from Parma.
Yeah.
Grew up. We like Parma because we're Greeks. And in Parma is a restaurant called Papu's, which is grandfather in Greek.
I regret to tell you, unfortunately, that place is going kaput. I don't know if that's a Greek word or not, but it's a great restaurant, though. You're right about that. Again, I'm not Pat's age, but we both grew up bowling at Yorktown Lanes. We had that in common, and that was we have many of the same. I've not really kept in touch with him, although we are Facebook friends. But beyond that, I haven't really kept in touch with him. But we have a lot of mutual friends. Turns out that my best friend does his taxes. We were texting each other during it the other day. They said on TV, he's no longer an accountant. Well, he's no longer an accountant. He's even got my best friend doing his taxes. So it's like.
you got to give him all the credit in the world to be on tour for 25 years, stick it out, and win a major. That's incredible.
But here's the thing. He's been on tour the last 2 years. He was a regional pro all those years because he had to work a day job. And it was when he got laid off as an accountant that he went out on tour. He made the kind of leap of faith. So he'd been.
Oh, I thought I saw. Now, this is on the CW, which is not, they don't have the coverage that we've had in the past.
He's been a PBA member that long, but just not a, he's not been a touring pro for 25 years. He's been pro for like 2 years.
I thought at the beginning, though, Rick, when they put up what everybody's done, how old you are, how many years you've been on tour, and how many titles you've won. I know it said 25 for Dombrowski and zero for titles. And
that's what they meant. He's been a regional pro most of the time. Because when you get the card, you get the card. You know what I mean? Like they don't make a distinction. So in a way that makes it all the more incredible what he did. To your other points here, as I go back to, I'll reference somebody else that I know, somebody that I worked with at Ohio University at the radio station, the public radio station down there, WOUB. I've mentioned him in the past, Dan McDowell, longtime 20-plus year Dallas sports radio guy, now does the spinoff show from there, sort of, the Dumb Zone. He talks about on there a good amount, this Marvin Miller biography. He references it a lot and everything like that, and the history of what, you know, the baseball – there really was no labor movement really before the 70s. But one of those things where, if I make another tortured early 1900s reference here, it was sort of the Treaty of Versailles, right? The way that we put our foot on Germany's neck and kept it there that led to the rise of the Nazis. Now, I'm not comparing unrestricted free agency to the rise of the Nazis, but it's a thing where the pendulum will swing the other way, right? The pendulum always will. And when the players got their freedom, so to speak, it was a thing where, and it gets passed down in baseball from generation to generation. Don't give an inch. Don't give an inch, because for 75 plus years, this is what they did to us. So we're bearing the fruit of what the owners, you talk about what the salaries were all those years, the salaries that barely rose from probably like the 20s to the 60s and the 70s. That's a big part of why we're at where we're at with this, because the players were so radicalized by that. And even though the players are fat and happy right now, they're still radicalized. So it's just one of those things where we'll see what happens after this year. I think we're going to be in for a shutdown of some point here. I'm almost wondering, and I'll just mention this before we get to our actual preview of this season, but like why the players aren't looking at, if you think back to 1994, when it was like, oh, the owners are going to lock them out after the season. The players are like, the F you are. And they walked out in the middle of the season. I kind of wonder why that's not on the table this time around. Is it, unless the players are gambling, which, by the way, it's a good gamble by them. Because I remember hearing, I mean, it's louder this time, but like, I think it was like 2022 or when it was, and then in the 20 teens. And, you know, I remember having Seth Everett, the great baseball journalist, on the show the one time, and he was like, this was in the 2010s. And he was like, well, the next one is going to be the big one. The owner's really going to stand up to him. I'm like, I've been hearing that. And nothing changes. So unless the players are just thinking we'll outlast them again, you almost wonder why they're not thinking, huh, we'll just walk out in August like we did in 94.
I just don't know what the thought process is today of the players and the Scott Boris's of the world vis-a-vis the schmoes who go to baseball games. And I consider myself one of the schmoes who goes to baseball games. Because when you walk around and pay, you know, $6 for a bottle of water or whatever the heck it is now. I mean, it's just, it's stupid money. And it's sad because I'll say it again. I went to every New York Ranger home game when I was a kid. My father had season tickets. He worked at the post office, $3 a seat to go to the old garden, to go to the new garden, I'm sorry. And just when you look at it now, I'll say it again. You want to take a family of four to decent seats at a fill in the blank football game. Football prices are stupid prices. You could tell me there's only 17 games, but these guys are all still making tens of millions of dollars. It's something has to happen, but I don't want to say I want there to be a cap in baseball.
Yeah. And that's, well, the other thing is, if anything, you know, idiot franchises like my tribe with the Dolans here, they might almost be making the case to the players to live with something like this, because the players desperately need a floor, because there's owners like the Dolans that just take that revenue sharing money and put it right in their pockets and cry poor. So right. I've been seeing figures recently. Brody Brazil, the baseball journalist on Twitter, has been speculating maybe a floor of like 130, 140, 150 million. That might get the players' attention. Is that if you couple it with a floor that is significantly higher than what some of these cheapskate teams are presently doing, and it, depending on where the top end, of course, of the cap is, the devil's always in the details, but that might be the thing that sells it. But I'm glad that you mentioned about, you know, the NFL here, because that's going to kind of, you know, dictate, I think, how we look at the two leagues here, because I want to just sort of take a high level overview of both of the leagues, because I want to compare and contrast this. We are recording this here at, I believe it's New Year's Eve for the NFL season here. So happy New Year's Eve to all who celebrate the NFL changing the calendar over every year in March. And you see in football, the potential through the draft and free agency to radically change the fortunes of teams. In the NBA, in the summer, it doesn't take much for too many teams. I say that as a guy where LeBron played for my favorite team twice And when he went elsewhere twice, the next season was a little bit different than the season that followed it. We don't really have that in baseball as much, largely because, again, you're starting 10 players out there. Now it's 10 in both leagues since the DH has been universal the last couple of years. And you see moves in the offseason where it will change somewhat, but teams really kind of rising up coming from nowhere is not really something that we've seen the last couple of years. If you were paying attention, you would at least see the seeds of what's going on here if a team makes a move up the standings from one year to the next. So I'm looking at it through that prism and kind of viewing the leagues in that way. And in the American League, where we'll start, I look at the East and I think, and this is something that I think we've seen this like once in a blue moon, I think, in the NFL, of where all the wild card teams come out of the same division. I think we have a chance for that in the AL East, and I'm actually going to pick that to happen. I think Toronto can repeat in the division based on what they did last year. I was a skeptic of them, but they made a believer out of me. They've had a pretty solid offseason, gained some pitching, lost some hitting. I've got the Yankees, Boston, Baltimore behind them in that that order. Baltimore, I think, is going to be back closer to where they were a couple of years ago. The Alfonso signing legitimizes them. Still need more pitching, which is why I have them fourth in the division. But I've got Tampa Bay a little ways back of them. The AL Central, the very definition of mediocrity. I mean, I'm picking Kansas City because you got to pick somebody. I know that Detroit's more of a fashionable pick, but I'm not really sure that I see it. I never thought they were as good as they looked through the first maybe two-thirds of the season last year, and I think they succumbed to regression down the stretch, which is why they went into that horrible slump. I'm going to give that one to Kansas City. I like Seattle by a narrow margin over Houston in the AL West, and I think Houston's the only team that is a near miss with the playoffs this year, unless you count maybe Detroit in the Central and perhaps Cleveland to a degree for winning the divisional title. But I think it's going to be a relatively narrow playoff race. I think it's going to be the 2, 3, 4 teams in the AL East fighting for the wild cards along with Houston. Texas is kind of throwing in the towel at this point because of the TV money kind of drying up with them. The A's aren't there yet. They're developing a heck of a lineup, but they're not there yet. The Angels are still the Angels. So that's how I see it kind of shaking out, is an AL where, again, continuity being the watchword, I think, as far as the teams that are really in the mix versus the teams that were in the mix a year ago. That's my perspective.
Well, I kind of agree with you on the AL East, but my view of the AL East and the reason that might not happen, as you know, is because four of the teams that you're playing, the Yankees have to play the Red Sox, and then they have to play Toronto, who manhandled them last year, as we know. The Orioles should be in for a comeback. I know we'll get to the Mets later. How Pete Alonso is on the Orioles is beyond me, but they've wanted to get him out of New York ever since the analytics guys showed up. For whatever reason, fielding, the guy's like 32-100 every year. I mean, every year, and has hit some big home runs. I thought that was a huge mistake letting him go, but we'll get to that later. I think the Yankees can turn the tables on Toronto, despite what they did to the Yankees last year. And the reason for that is, you know, in New York, you're hearing this all the time, Rick. I don't know if it got out there, but it's, oh, the Yankees are only running it back. They're just running it back. They're running it back. What? They haven't done anything. They're running it back. Well, I got two answers to that. I looked at where they have, I don't know if it was ESPN, but somewhere where they predict how many wins are going to be for each team in each division. And in the AL East, other than Tampa, everything is between like 87 or 88 wins and 84 wins. They're like all one win apart. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was like the top ones. Maybe it wasn't ESPN. But the point is what you've already brought up. These are, you know, there's at least three killer teams and maybe a fourth. If the Orioles can't come back to 2 years, 2 years ago. But I think here's why I think the Yankees, first of all, if they're running it back and they get 94 wins with the same team, well, that would be great. But you know what the wild card is. They got Max Fried last year to come in and be the number one, but they didn't get, you know, their superstar, Garrett Cole, their Cy Young Award-winning pitcher 2 years ago, didn't pitch at all. And already he's not coming back now. They've already announced, he threw 96 like the first week he was in spring training. 96, but they're still saying they want to be safe with him, so he's not coming back till the end of May, maybe into June. Now, on the one hand, you could say they were so good last year. You know, the Yankees led the league in home runs, 274. I can't remember the runs number, but they left the league in runs scored. And they're going to get Cole at some point. They may not even need him the first 2 months. I'd like to have him pitch if he can pitch. I don't know why you're throwing 96 in spring training. And I think that wasn't even in an exhibition game, Rick. So I don't know that that's a mistake or not. Don't let
it's a mistake that he's throwing 96 now coming off of Tommy John surgery. So that's where, you know, like that's the end that I fault them on, Steve. The timetable was always late May, early June, somewhere in there. That was news to me when you said that he's already throwing that kind of heat now. You're just inviting a double dip injury. I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
It doesn't make sense go one way or the other. And you should, I agree with going the safe way, because once upon a time in baseball, we always go back to this, guys played in a 154 game season. They played 150 games like it was nothing. Mm-hmm. Now, if you play 150 games today and 162, you're like an Iron Man.
Right.
And I'm like, what are you kidding? You know, we say it every year. Today, bigger, faster, stronger, better doctors, better nutrition, better things you can do, you know, on your own. Mm-hmm. Yet everybody and their mother has an oblique by the second week of the season. That's an exaggeration, of course, but you know what I'm saying. But for the Yankees, in addition to Cole, you know, got to be careful when you say this name, but how good is Cam Schlittler going to be? I think he's going to be good. And, you know, and their backups. So to me, if I'm saying if Cole is healthy, if he can throw in mid to high 90s, if he can do that, Max Fried and Cole, or Cole and Max Fried, depending on how Cole comes back, they're as good a 1-2 as anybody in baseball. Now, you got to go deeper than that. That's the other problem in baseball. Now, I really think you need six starters at the start of the year, not five starters. I think someday we're going to see, which is what they do in Japan, by the way. I think someday, maybe not 5-10 years from now, I don't know, we're going to see a guy who pitches every Tuesday and a guy who pitches every Saturday. And it's going to be 7 days with 6 days of rest now, instead of in the old days in the 19-teens into the 20s, I think it was 2 days of rest. Then it became 3 days of rest. Then the Mets of 1969 were the first ones to expand it even more. And now we have what we have, 4 days of rest.
Yeah.
So I think the Yankees can turn the tables. I have in the back of my mind how embarrassing. I mean, Vlad Guerrero, George Springer, these guys look like MVP players against the Yankees.
Yeah.
For sure. So I think that's kind of a toss-up between the two of those. I think Red Sox, does Roman Anthony become a superstar this year?
Maybe. Pretty good in the WBC so far, isn't he?
Right. No, you're right. My biggest fear of the WBC, which maybe we'll talk about later, I don't know, is who was it? Was it Edwin Diaz who missed a whole year for jumping up and down during the WBC?
Yeah, he's on my keeper team, so I'm glad he's not there this year.
Well, I'd always prefer, and you can tell me it's in November and you'd be right, but I'd rather they have the WBC at the end of the season, because if somebody gets hurt doing something stupid like jumping up and down on the mound to celebrate a victory,
yeah.
I'm not saying the WBC is the NBA Cup. Another NBA Cup is a made-for-TV event, I'm sorry. And the Knicks won it this year. There was actually talk if they were going to hang a banner in Madison Square Garden. And I'm like, what, are you out of your minds? A banner to win the NBA Cup?
Yeah.
But this is where we are, where they have to come up with things. You know, the basketball all-star game. I mean, these things are like lunacy. Yeah. The NFL flag football all-star game. I mean, come on.
I know.
Whatever. The WBC is probably the best because, you know, everybody's trying. Everybody's playing for their country.
Yeah.
But I always have in the back of my head Edwin Diaz. And so Aaron Judge, for example, is playing out of his mind. MVP last year, a few home runs already in the WBC. And I'm looking at it just going, don't get hurt. Don't get hurt. Don't get hurt. And that's the whole game for me. How healthy are you going to be coming out of the WBC before the season starts? Right? That's where we are.
Couple things here for the benefit of any fans that may not know either of these factoids here. For anybody that's below a certain age, they might not know what you and I know, which is that back, I think, maybe even through the 70s, You talk about playing games in November. There would be tours of Japan sometimes. MLB All-Stars. They would go over there. They would play some games over in Japan. So you would see that. And that also, and again, I know that you know this, but for the benefit of any folks that are checking us out that are baseball fans that are not as much into, say, Euro soccer, that's where the NBA stole that from. That's a like in-season tournament like the CONCACAF Cup and some of the things like that. That's something soccer's been doing for a long time. So that's where, you know, they were like, Now baseball supposedly is thinking about some form of it. Like, how would that even work? Because in the NBA, it's hard enough to jigger with the schedule in the middle of the season and just you do this. And like, as far as like, I don't know what, you know, with baseball, because you couldn't possibly have it to be determined for series in July and everything, right? So, you know, that's probably not going to happen.
If I could just give you one thing about that, in the 1920s, Babe Ruth wanted to go on these excursions to Japan and other places. And the first time he wanted to do it, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, who became the commissioner of baseball because of the Black Sox scandal, he said to Ruth, if you go on one of these tours, I'm going to suspend you. And he went on one of these tours, and I think 1923 or 24, what, 25, one of those years before the 60 homers, but one of those years, he was suspended for like the first 5 or 6 weeks of a season. And whenever I look at that, I always look at, so how many home runs did he miss because he went on the tour? Why did he go on the tour? Why everybody else goes on the tour? Yeah. He could make real good money back then and take whoever he wanted with him. And eventually he did do that eventually. But 1 year, the first year, I think, he got suspended a long time.
That means he probably only led the league by 35 home runs that year. And that was and again, what we say before, everything ties together in the FDH lounge here. That's when owners didn't pay players squat. So you'd have things like that. And oh, by the way, you'd have a thrown World Series in 1919, et cetera, et cetera. So the team that today exemplifies the other end of the spectrum is the team that headlines the National League as the two-time National League and World Series champion LA Dodgers. I guess I'll start with them in the National League. That I'm going to go with the conventional wisdom for them to win the division. I'm going to give them 104 wins this year. I think that they're the only team in recent baseball history where you can say, even if they're not fully healthy, they can probably pull off 104 wins. If they are fully healthy and a number of guys are having career years, could be in the 110s. I don't think that'll be the case, because the one thing people are saying about the Dodgers for all of the alarm is that the growth curve on most of their guys, at least their prime hitters, are starting to get up there. So the Dodgers don't have too many years of this core of guys being at the level that they're at, with the exception of Ohtani, but we think of him as both a hitter and a pitcher, of course. Kyle Tucker, that's one of the reasons he didn't get more money from anybody else, is that other teams were like, I don't know what he's going to look like in his mid to late 30s. The Dodgers are like, we don't care. We're going to make it all deferred payments anyways, which that's the first thing that's got to go in the next CBA, by the way. But I've got them winning the West. I've got San Diego making it in as a wild card with 89 wins. So they're going to be playing for the wild card by pretty much the third week of April. But, you know, I think they can make it nonetheless. The NL Central, I'm not going to quite compare it to the AL Central. But again, it doesn't have as much depth in it, perhaps, as certainly the NL East and some of the other divisions in baseball here. I've got Milwaukee and the Cubs both making the playoffs. I've got Milwaukee repeating as division champions, the Cubs making it into 87 wins. I've got Cincinnati coming just close with 86. I think Cincinnati's going to be right on the cusp. In the East, I think Atlanta is going to – Atlanta's a team that a lot of people are sleeping on. And I think, again, they're not fully healthy either. They had the injury. I think it was – I think Schwellenbach had the injury in spring training here. That's going to be kind of disruptive to them. I think they're going to be in the mix. I have them just missing the playoffs behind the Mets, who I have as a wild card, and the Phillies, who I have winning the division here. And so we can get to subsequently, and we will, in the American and the National League, how we see the playoffs shaping up once we get to that point. But as far as the shape of the National League, the regular season, what are your thoughts, Steve?
Well, my problem with Atlanta, I think they can make a run, but Profar, who got suspended 80 games last year, as you know, has now been suspended for 162 games this year.
Yeah, what a dummy.
There's just something missing there, and I think that's a big hurt, because the problem last year with the Braves, who I thought could do really well last year, they got off to such a terrible start. and they lost Profar for 80 games. And they, you know, Acuna was hurt, I think, still.
Yeah.
And they just could never get over the hump. And they cleaned house in terms of management and everything.
But yeah.
Let me first talk a little bit about the Dodgers, because until 15 minutes when I came on with you, I was, you know, don't fight the Kings. You know, the Dodgers should be on paper anyway, locks to win everything again. But, well, first I'll give you the pitch for the Dodgers, which everybody else will tell you about. Their first baseman, second baseman, third baseman, shortstop, and catcher, they're all coming back from last year. Their left fielder and their center fielder are all coming back from last year. The only place they had to fill was right finger. Phil was right field. What did they do? They gave Kyle Tucker $60 million a year.
Yep.
So what do I say now? This year, especially if they win, they've become the Yankees of way, way, way ago, maybe the late 90s, but more the Yankees of like the late 30s when they won 4 years in a row.
When they were the only team that paid players, and even then it wasn't that much.
Yeah, and the Yankees, of course, later on in the 50s and 60s, Kansas City Athletics were like their farm team. Roger Maris was on the Kansas City Athletics, comes to New York, wins back-to-back MVPs.
So was my tribe. We were a feeder team too.
No, so I'm just saying, but it all fits. So I read a couple of articles about the Dodgers because I wanted to see, and the big discussion in Dodgerland was, well, where is Kyle Tucker going to bat in the lineup? Well, you know, he's a good on-base guy. First of all, I don't know how he gets $60 million, but they can afford it. They do whatever they're doing, and that's apparently legal. We'll pay Ohtani for the next 50 years, you know, because he's not making $70 million a year. I mean, he's making it, but he's not getting paid $70 million a year. That's how they can get those other guys. I don't know the Dodgers lineup specifically by rote, but I went and looked at their guys from last year. And it turns out the reason I think Kyle Tucker is going to bat, this is not official now, but the reason Kyle Tucker is going to bat fifth is because right now they can put out a lineup with Ohtani leading off, as you know. So when they go Ohtani lefty, Betts righty, Freeman lefty, Will Smith righty, Kyle Tucker lefty, Teoscar Hernandez righty, Max Muncy lefty, Andy Pagé? Hey, he's a heck of a player. He's a righty. And then Tommy Edmonds, the weakest of the bunch, is a switch hitter.
Yep.
My point being, their lineup is even better than it's been, and that's scary. Also, I'm not the biggest Edwin Diaz fan in the world. He had a great year last year.
Yep.
He had a great year last year. But
they actually have a real closer this year.
But he's also had other years where he's been the real closer and got hammered in big spots.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's like a total check the box. But you're right. They've much improved from last year.
Yeah.
But I want to – so I understand what everybody will say about the Dodgers. Hard for me to argue. But here's my argument. So in the AL East, look, to me the Mets are the Mets. How they didn't make the playoffs last year is absurd. They were killing it at the beginning of the year. They were up like 5.5 games in the division after 50 games or whatever it was. And, you know, they just hit a brick wall. But here's who they lost. And I think they lost a lot. Pete Alonso, I'll say it forever. Pete Alonso is one of the greatest Mets of all time. I'm a Yankee fan. But you always knew he was going to hit home runs and big home runs. You always knew he was going to get a lot of RBIs. And he hit okay for average. You know, you got to look at averages differently nowadays. If a guy hits 270 even, that's really good nowadays, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But they lost Alonso, Brandon Nimmo, another longtime Met. Jeff McNeil, didn't he win the batting title 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think he something, won it two something years like ago. That, yeah.
And, of course, Diaz to the Dodgers. Now, they're bringing in Freddie Peralta, big-time signing. Bo Bichette, real good player. Louis Robert, good player. Simeon, love him, but he's getting kind of old. But the biggest question mark, which I have on my list for them, is they bring in Devin Williams to be the closer. You know how bad Devin Williams was last year as a Yankee.
Right.
Now, if the question is, can he pitch in New York? Well, so far the answer is 100% no. but then the question becomes, and we'll find out this year, they're apparently making him the closer. But why was he so bad with the Yankees? And now what? He's going to go to Queens? He's going to go from the Bronx to Queens and be a great closer, which is what he was before?
Right.
I don't know. We're going to find out. But they have Peralta, this guy, Nolan McClain.
Yeah.
Rookie, who's a rookie this year, came up and lit it up.
He's for real, man. He's the real deal.
He's for real. And then Kodai Senga, if he can be healthy, I think they have a big chance. But the team I'm picking to win the AL East and beating the Dodgers. I know everybody's laughing now, including me. But I'm going to pick the Phillies, and here's why. And I told you, I just discovered this earlier today. I told you off the air. The Phillies had two guys. So my new favorite stat, I'm not Mr. Stat. No, I don't believe in a lot of them. But this FIP, fielding independent pitching, which only counts. You know about this. Strikeouts, walks, hit by pitch, and home runs.
Yes.
That's what you're based on. And that supposedly tells a pitcher or a team that, you know, he's real good with his own stuff. He can't be affected positively or negatively by ground balls to short, for example.
Right.
But they had two of the top four guys in the league. The Phillies, the reason I picked them is the Phillies are number one in the National League on FIP. I think in the majors.
Okay.
Sanchez and Luzardo, who are not the big guys you think of when you think of Wheeler, they were number two and number four in the whole league for this
time. Okay.
So then I looked up Wheeler because, of course, we know Wheeler got hurt at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And Wheeler had a good FIP as well, but he missed the last 2 months of the season. He had that thoracic outlet depression surgery.
Yeah.
But he's going to be back, right? I think he's coming back soon.
In May, probably. But yeah, he'll be in for the playoffs, which is what you're talking about here.
You know, I hate to say it. I think April and May is soon nowadays. That's how bad it's become.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tommy John surgery and all that. Again, Garrett Cole.
Sure.
We all get that. So they re-signed Schwarber, who was unbelievable. And even if Schwarber hits 220, he's got a really good on-base percentage. Led the league in home runs and RBIs last year. They re-signed JT Realmuto, who's a really good catcher. It's got a nice bat. They lost Nick Castellanos, but he's a little nutty. He's talented, but he's a little nutty. So I think they can make a run. I think they have a chance to beat the Dodgers. Last year, they were second in the league in hits. They were third in batting average. They were fourth in OPS. Some people don't believe in batting average anymore. I happen to. Of course, I'll tell you, on-base percentage is more important, of course.
Okay.
But I think they're pretty much running it back, but they're running it back, and they're getting Wheeler back. I mean, the Mets traded Wheeler how many years ago, or let him go, what, 7-8 years ago?
Yeah.
They could use him.
Definitely, yeah.
So I know it's a long shot. I don't know what the odds are, but I know it's a long shot, and it's just so hard for me to pick. I think I picked the Dodgers last year all year, and including the playoffs and the World Series, of course. And look, nobody will be surprised if they win this year. And I think they've done enough to make it again. They're the Yankees now. They're the Yankees. You're trying to be the Pirates of 1960. Sorry to hear Bill Mazeroski passed away a week or two ago.
Yep.
But you know, it's going to be, as you already said, it's going to be a big upset if the Dodgers don't win. Whoever beats them.
Yes, we're at that point now. With Philly, I look at, you know, and again, Castellanos was already having some issues here, but like, I don't really like their outfield depth. Realmuto's not really Realmuto anymore. Like 2 years ago, best hitting catcher in baseball by a decent margin. Today, say hello to Cal Raleigh and some other guys here. But, you know, yeah, he's getting a little bit older. I don't know. I mean, If there's a very, very short list of teams in the National League that can beat them, I'll say that, and it would be them. When you said to me 15 minutes before showtime you changed your mind, I was like, are you about to tell me that they had a very horrible bus crash on the way to the ballpark and a bunch of these guys are mangled? Because, you know.
I'm the first to know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You heard it on the police scanner somehow in New York. But, you know, yeah. So, well, I guess I'll start there. I'll start with my National League picks here. So I'm looking at for the League Divisional Series, I'll say Dodgers over San Diego in three, Milwaukee. I'll start with a wild card round rather. Philadelphia over Chicago Cubs in three, San Diego over the Mets in three. League Divisional Series, Dodgers over San Diego in 3, Milwaukee over Philadelphia in 5. And I will look for a repeat of last year when I foolishly thought Milwaukee would beat the Dodgers in the National League Championship Series. Boy, was I set straight. I'll pick another sweep, Dodgers over Milwaukee in 4. In the American League, wild card round, number 6, Baltimore over number 3, Kansas City in 2. Number 5, Boston over the Yankees in 3. I think that's going to be a thriller of a series here. League Divisional Series, number 1, Seattle over number 6, Baltimore in 3. Number 5, Boston over number 2, Toronto in 5. I think it'll be another thriller. The League Championship Series, I don't think will be a thriller. Seattle over Boston in 5. World Series, I will say Dodgers over Seattle in 6. I think Seattle takes that next step this year. Again, they lose Suarez, but I think that starting rotation that they have, which was not necessarily fully healthy all throughout the year last year, I think that starting rotation is really going to be very, very strong start to finish. And what we've seen with Seattle is they'll make a trade deadline move if they need to. And I think they're going to need to. They're going to need a bat that's going to replace Suarez. I think they're going to go get one. And I think that puts them over the top. But they and anybody else, I mean, has a puncher's chance, if you even want to call it that. Yeah, maybe a jabber's chance against the Dodgers, I would say. Not even a puncher's chance. It's just there's so much that's got to go wrong for the Dodgers. And it's a thing where, again, I almost think, and this kind of goes back to, let's go full circle for a second here with talking about Ken Detweiler and Don Koster and those guys being traditionalists and how they would be a little bit kind of, feeling ambiguous about the game gaining in popularity at this point because of things like the pitch clock and the World Baseball Classic and some of these other, you know, gimmicky type things. We could even throw the pizza box bases in there while we're at it as far as the stolen bases again. But when you look at this, and you see, I see a bit of an analogy here, particularly if the Dodgers do, through their habits, cause a lockout. That with baseball, again, I don't begrudge anybody in any sport for implementing analytics. And by the way, and this is another topic for another day, I know that your thoughts on the NBA are similar to your thoughts on MLB, the whole pace and space thing in the NBA. I know that that's a really big abomination thing to you in there and what analytics has done to the game. The analytics with baseball, it took it so far in that direction that there were corrective measures that were needed. That's where they outlawed the extreme shift. And they did some things to try to get away from the three true outcomes that were happening. The Dodgers, if I'm right about this, and it's a third consecutive one here, and we're looking at the Oakland A's redux from the early 70s, I see the same thing happening. We might need the strong medicine of a lockout that forces real change, a high floor, not just any floor. Now, I don't want to hear a floor of like 110 million, but if it ends up being 150 somewhere in there, and then a ceiling somewhere in like the high 200s, in there to where you're locking teams into more of a range. The Dodgers, this could be the bitter medicine that baseball needs. Because in the end, again, baseball getting as unwatchable as it got for the better part of a decade, ever since the StatCast stuff became mainstream and teams were like, I'm going to run my team based purely on this, to hell with watchability, which, by the way, I don't have a problem with. The goal is to win, not to make it watchable. This isn't pro wrestling where you're trying to put on 5-star matches. You're trying to win a game. But we needed corrective measures, even if I didn't like all of them as a purist. We need corrective measures for what the Dodgers are doing. And Steve, I'm optimistic enough to think that they're going to give us the pretext for that. They're going to win the third straight World Series, and enough people in this country are going to say enough is enough.
On that part, I'll say I hope you're right about the result if the Dodgers win. I just have a final four. I got the Yankees beating Seattle for the pennant because I think Cole's going to come back and they're going to have one of, if not the best, 1-2 pitching in baseball. They still have the MVP. Aaron Judge is still playing at a high level. You know, he's going to replace Don Mattingly as the best Yankee never to win best Yankee never to win a World Series. And I think if they don't win this year, even if they make the World Series, I think Aaron Boone goes. I mean, I don't know how. He had to have been the manager of the Yankees longer than any manager of the Yankees ever without winning. Even Joe Girardi won one. Okay. So I think. And then, of course, I have the Phillies beating the Dodgers for the pennant and the Phillies beating the Yankees. But again, that was a very off the top of my head, very late before showtime.
Okay.
But no, I give them, you might be right about Real Muto. I know his numbers haven't been as good, but he still is a catcher who's been there forever. And their top three pitchers are really good. I mean, they're really, yeah. really good. I think they have a chance. And Schwarber has become a superstar.
Yeah.
But, you know, they used to criticize his average. But I think 1 year it was like 220 and his on-base percentage was 357. The guy gets a lot of walks.
Yes.
And, again, I think we have to really reanalyze what we have for batting averages.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when they think about the 20s, oh, everybody and his mother hit 350.
Yeah.
Or whatever they say. That's understandable. But
yeah.
now it's gone the other way. Because yeah. you can have a good year, in my opinion, if you hit 270.
Yeah.
Or when I'm watching games with Johnny, we'll be like, oh, he's hitting 280. That's like 305.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And that's only been the last couple of years. But I think that's where we are in that. I'm not sure how that's going to change, if at all. I don't think it is going to change.
I don't think it's going to change either. And, again, looking at this here, there will be very, very, very happy fans in Philadelphia. I'm sure that some of them will be getting, you'll be seeing TV interviews of like, I was there as a kid in 1950, and then I was there again in 2009, and finally we got over the hump against the Yankees. So, you know, there will be some of that, Steve. You will see somebody getting interviewed along those lines if they can get the job done, if they can win another World Series in Philadelphia. Again, they were pretty close a couple of years ago against Houston before it all kind of fell apart. And again, we'll have to see how it plays out. I know that our good friend and your co-host on the Great Callous Remarks podcast, Joe Stazak, has been very critical of them the last several postseasons about yep. becoming an all or nothing team. Can they curb those habits in the postseason? We would agree that if they are to get past LA, they have to, again, become that version that they were in 2022 and not the versions that we've seen in the playoffs since then.
Right. That's right.
And they didn't measure up very well against the Dodgers last year. But again, we'll have to see how that plays out. We'll have to see if they can stand up to the Dodgers' arms and lineup. But again, it's great to be on the verge of another season here. And again, always great to be here with you, Steve, paying tribute to our great friends in baseball, Ken Detweiler and Don Koster, and giving a season preview that these guys could be proud of. So you are an essential part of that. And I just can't thank you enough personally and professionally, Steve.
Well, I appreciate doing this every year, as you know. And again, more Ken than Don for me, although I know it's big shoes to fill and I try and fill them every year. But Ken Detweiler was such a good guy and such a baseball guy and an excellent coach, a baseball lifer, who just kind of lived for baseball. That's how he struck me, especially the two times I met him in Cleveland with you. And we did a couple of shows from Cleveland. So I thought it was yeah. really cool and very sorry to see these guys go. It's just very sad. I don't know if we're getting – I guess we are getting to that age where we're the older people, Rick. I don't think you're there yet, but you'll get there.
Well, I'll get there. Shudder to think. I back up everything you said about Ken, the gentle giant and a guy who just 50 plus years in the game of playing baseball in his youth and then coaching it. And he had gone back to coaching. There was like one or two times where he kind of stepped away from it, like, time for me to retire. And then just got back into it. And I think he may have been doing a little bit of baseball coaching in Virginia, I think, which was at the yeah. very end for him last year. And that was where – and initial reports – this is one of these sketchy things where, like, you're hearing from friends in the grapevine, but he was in Virginia when he passed away. Initial reports were that he may have actually been on a baseball field at the time. And I was like, okay, well, all things being equal, like, just knowing the guy, that's how he would have loved to go.
Right. But then – if there's one place you're going to be for him, that's Pistol Pete dropping dead during the basketball game.
Yeah. With the other thing of like, but if he was there, like doing any baseball coaching, like he wouldn't have wanted it to be in front of the kids, wouldn't want to traumatize them. So everything's always more complicated than your first thought. Your first thought's always like, oh, that's how fitting for the guy. And then you start thinking of, but then I think I found out later on that wasn't the case. And I was kind of relieved I'm like, I don't want to think of kids being traumatized by that. So, you know, but however it was, baseball was very, very intertwined in his life. Loved it to death. Don Koster as well. Couple of great guys, and just nothing more fitting than to be able to every year memorialize them with you and to be able to weave that into our baseball preview for the season. So much, much, much thanks to you, Steve Callis, for your priceless contributions in this. Thank you, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1911.